You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. So if you're looking for any type of batteries, whether it's for your truck, your car, your trail cameras, your rangefinder, stop into a local Interstate Batteries retail location. There are thousands upon thousands of them all over the United States. Talk with a battery specialist and get the batteries that you need to go on with your life. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey, welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. So today I've got Jeff Lund on here from the Mediocre Alaskan Podcast. And I don't know if you remember or not, I was on his show not too long ago and we had a great conversation. And on that show, Jeff had mentioned that he was going to be coming down to Wyoming for a deer hunt. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But we're going to dig into a few things. But one thing I think is really cool. Most people dream of the day when they can go to Alaska for a hunt. And I think it's funny how people from Alaska dream of the day where they can come down to the lower 48 for a hunt. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Jeff, what's going on, man?
Not too much. How are you?
I am doing good. It's a nice Thursday. We're almost at the weekend, so everything's going good here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Really quick, before we jump into it, tell people about the Mediocre Alaskan Podcast and some of your background and your, you know, just you. Talk about you a little bit.
Jeff Lund, I grew up in Southeast Alaska on Prince of Wales Island. Now I live in Ketchikan. I did a 10-year stint teaching high school English in California after I graduated college, and I started writing an outdoor column for a newspaper down there. So when I moved back to Alaska, I kept writing the column for a newspaper up here, and the Mediocre Alaskan was just a different way of communicating. So in addition to the column, I did the podcast, and then post some other stuff on the website, mediocrealaskan.com, and just kind of like to talk to different people about, you know, not necessarily being the expert and admitting that there's some failings that happen and learning and figuring stuff out. Because I grew up fishing. I didn't really grow up hunting. So I've only been hunting for about 7 years. So, you know, you're going to make those mistakes. But, you know, if you try to hide all those things, then, you know, there's just nothing there. So being honest about it, I think was kind of fun and kind of the angle that I've gone with. And my writing has definitely been a lot more Bill Heavey and Patrick McManus than any sort of the pros or the experts. So I've just kind of adopted that persona, which is why I wanted to reach out to you, because it kind of looked like you were in the same boat there. So I appreciate
it. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I don't ever claim to be an expert in anything. Not even close, not in anything I do, not just hunting alone, but I just don't think I've ever achieved that level of competence in myself to call myself an expert. And I think that's difficult to do, you know, and I don't think everybody has that ability to admit fault and talk about mistakes and failures and where we went wrong and how we learn. And there's not too many of us running around there. So it's fun to be able to talk to people, and I like to listen to people talk about it, because to me, you learn from that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it makes the success that much more rewarding, because it's not that you're, you know, have a self-defeating attitude, you know, you're confident, you want to get out there and you're excited and, you know, you are proficient on some level, but, you know, you don't have to keep up this persona or this facade that you're an expert or trying to, you know, make your, oh, I'm going to be the next Steve Rinella or Randy Newberg or Corey Jacobson. You know, you can just be yourself and you can say, hey, you know what? I messed up. I screwed this up. Or, hey, I have questions. You know, can we just talk about some basic sort of stuff? And it's pretty refreshing and liberating to be able to be honest.
Yeah, without a doubt. So let's jump into your hunt, right? Jump into Wyoming. So I kind of want to talk most of the time on stories from the season. I just let people roll with it, right? You, unfortunately, I've got questions for you. So you don't get to just roll with the story. Not too many, man.
I like that. As the outdoor writer, you know, you, as a journalist, you have to look at the entire story and then find the angle for it. And so there's so much stuff that was going on in my brain. And first of all, it was, you know, I drew a mule deer tag, and my fiance is getting her PhD at the University of Wyoming. So that's why Wyoming was there. It was fun to be able to go down there and hunt with her. So that's why I went down there. And you know, just so excited to get down there. But then, you know, you're how often you can be able to draw that tag, and then for the buck, it's $200 and some, and so there's all that behind it. But so it was a lot of fun to go down there, but you know, stressful. First time I've ever hunted that area. We did a lot of scouting during the summer, which was good. Put some game cams up and did the work and put the boots on the ground. So that was.
Well, that's where I wanted to start, was kind of preparation and logistics of the whole thing. I've talked to a few guys and I've done a few podcasts about logistics of people going from lower 48 up to Alaska and hunting, but I've never really talked to anybody going in reverse. So how does that look from the planning perspective from you when you were planning to go down? You had a little advantage, I think, having your fiance down there, but even then there's still questions and you know, issues.
Yeah. I tried to absorb as much stuff as possible, knowing that, you know, you can't just go down there. And I was really worried and paranoid about, you know, private land versus public land. Up here, it's, you know, there's so much, it's all, you don't have to worry about that at all. You just have to make sure that you're not in someone's, you know, backyard that happens to, you know, they have some land, but, you know, for the most part, you don't have to worry about that at all. So in the spring, I was hoping I'd draw an elk tag, which I ended up not, but, you know, I bought the elk 101 stuff from Corey, and I was looking at that, ingesting that as much as possible, doing YouTube, doing reading. And, you know, everyone's talking about boots on the ground. Everyone's talking about doing the work beforehand and finding spots. And so I did a podcast with a buddy of mine, who lives, in Wyoming too. And I had e-scouted three spots and I said, hey man, you know, how do these look? And so we kind of talked about it in the podcast. So that was June, and then I didn't draw the elk tag, but you know, even going through that elk 101 stuff, it still reinforces basic hunting principles and just getting in your head, you know, food, shelter, water. It's up here, that just means outside, you know, it's so easy for things to live up here, especially deer. And so you don't think about those sort of things. So, reading as much as possible, watching YouTube videos, all that stuff, just putting it in the brain. And then when I got down there, I drew the mule deer tag, which was sweet. And so we went and looked at some spots and put some game cams up and saw some deer. And I'm just thinking, oh man, this is going to be awesome. You know, cause you're, then I started getting worried because they talk about finding little chunks of land that might be overlooked. And like, all right, well, we have our game camera up in one of those maybe overlooked little chunks of land. So hopefully they'll be there. But man, we saw some huge bucks in velvet, and that was just, I was so excited, and we developed our plan from there.
That's awesome. So I'm impressed with the amount of education that's out there now. You mentioned Elk 101 and some of the other courses out there. And of course I love Elk 101, and we're tied in with Elk 101. So I always try to promote that University of Elk Hunting, but man, there's getting to be some really good courses out there aside from that stuff. You know, Mark Livesay, I don't know if you know Mark Livesay, he's got that e-scouting course, phenomenal, all about e-scouting, man. And it's just hours and hours on how to find the spot that you need to go to. Just so much information out there on the internet now.
Yeah, I really like reading about some of the old time stuff, and that's usually where you got your information. It was this, you know, fly fishing Montana. And so you'd get the book, you know, or fly fishing Colorado or fly fishing Alaska or wherever it was, you'd get the book and you'd look at it. There would be the maps. But, you know, now with the e-scouting and such, like you don't really have the books. You don't read a book about how to e-scout. You know, you go online and look for that sort of content to look at it. And
yeah,
there is still
watch
such
a YouTube
a difference.
Video.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And there's still such a difference too. And that was the thing that, you know, I was worried about in the back of my head, that, you know, how is this going to be different than what I read? You know, it seems like a slam dunk, but there's that difference between like knowledge and wisdom. And knowledge is like knowing these facts or these tactics, and wisdom is knowing which one to employ when you're out in the wild.
Mm-hmm. So how much did that early boots on the ground scouting trip help you?
It helped a lot, but day one, we got down there and I'm so excited and there's someone in the spot.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I ran through what the stock was going to be, because we found this really awesome bed and we put a game camera there and we saw some nice bucks in there and we saw some bucks in the area. And I found this rock that we could sneak to, and it was 260 yards. So in my brain for about 2.5 months, I'm thinking, okay, we're going to hike up here in the dark. We can get to this rock without anything seeing us. And then we'll get to the shooting rock just at first light, and it's going to be sitting right there, and I can make that shot. And I was practicing for that shot. And when, you know, they say have two or three spots ready, and I was like, okay, yeah. But this spot's totally going to be overlooked. And when we pulled up, and it was an hour and a half before sunrise, and there were two people sitting in the truck, and I thought, no way. There's just no way. And that was, so that was actually a huge letdown, because I put all of my, you know, we put so much effort and so much expectation into that one spot. And
did you talk to those guys or just?
No, we just saw them and just, you know, just turned around and tried to go to another spot before the sun came up. And we went to a different spot, and it wasn't too far away, and we were there for sunrise, hiked in, and, you know, there when we pulled up, we were about ready to get out and getting stuff ready out of the trunk, and another truck pulls up, and it was a guy and his son. I'm like, ah, well, you know, you can't get too mad at this guy for, you know, he's hunting with his son. But he got out, and they hiked a different way, so we're thinking, okay, again, this is not something that happens typically in Alaska. So we were up there for sunrise, and then we were glassing, didn't see anything, and we kind of looked over, and there was another group of people. And so when we hiked out, you know, these entrances to some of these smaller areas, they're not real big. And so you know if someone else is there. So these people had seen two vehicles and still parked. And then someone else had seen three vehicles and still parked. And you're just thinking, this is crazy. You know, just this, I'm a big fly fisherman. And so it's just this orange hatch, you know, everywhere. Yeah. I'm thinking, this is crazy. Like, this is, it feels unsafe. But we didn't see anything that whole first day, and it was kind of frustrating.
How often do you see other hunters like that in Alaska?
I kind of know where to kind of plan to go. There's a spot here near Ketchikan that gets a lot of, because it's an easy drive. Ketchikan doesn't have a whole lot of roads. Prince of Wales does, and so you can get away from people, and it's super easy. But you know, you kind of want to have the mountain yourself, and so, you know, you get there early, and if someone else comes up, like, all right, well, they're going to go somewhere else. And that's, you know, kind of the ethic that we apply to. You just don't have to deal with that. But, you know, it's just the way it is, public land hunting. You know, you hear about it all the time, and you watch Randy Newberg's show, and there's, you know, other people, and it just happens. But, you know, when I start to feel a little bit pressure just because I put everything into that first spot. And so we're looking at plan B, plan C on day one. And you know, we're seeing other people.
That's rough. I guess I'm just kind of used to it. It seems like every time I go hunting, there's another truck there, you know. So it's something I guess we're used to dealing with. And I saw that in Colorado when I was up there hunting. I saw another hunter in the woods, and he was kind of cutting down low and heading back downhill. So I just went past him, you know, went on uphill. And of course, he ended up killing a bull that day, right? I didn't, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, that was another thing that everyone talks about, going further, you know? And so we saw people, okay, we're going to go, you know, another mile. And then in the third spot we went on day one, we just kept going further back, and we got to this nice creek, and, you know, it just looked perfect for something to come out. There was a nice little wedge, and there was a lot of the cover. And so I thought, this is it, man. And, you know, people say you got to stay till dark. Don't leave before dark. You have to stay until dark, and then you're going to hike out with your headlamp. It just, that's the program. That's the routine. That's what you have to do. And it got cold, and we were just glassing, and I see this just huge trout, because I'm so bored. I'm just looking at the water, and there's this trout that's just surfacing, and I'm like, dude, that thing is so awesome. And I wish I had my fly rod. You know, I'm supposed to be glassing for mule deer. But my day one ends with me glassing up trout. It was just such a weird,
funny. You know,
welcome to the lower 48 for us. Yeah. But we stayed till dark, didn't see anything, and then hiked back to the car. But, you know, it was frustrating. But, you know, this is, all right, this is what we're in for. This is what we have to do.
Yeah. So you guys got hit with some weather too, right?
Yeah. That first night, so between day one and day two, we camped and woke up to a frozen tent. You know, just didn't want to get out of it. You know, you just know that it's crusty. And I put my boots outside, and the stake that we had, it kind of pulled up. And so one of my boots was exposed, and it snowed just a little bit. So my boot was frozen in the morning, had some snow in it. I'm thinking, this is miserable. So then that day we hiked back. It was a different spot. So we'd left in the dark from the spot from day one, driven to a different spot and camped. And so we, we hiked up this mountain in the fog, in the little bit of snow, and just kind of waited for it to clear slash used it to kind of cover, because we had to move a little bit just because you kind of sit there getting cold. Got to another different river and, you know, stayed there all day, and ended up seeing someone in the afternoon. So we went further than them. We crossed the creek and then got to the other side and stayed until it kind of got warmed up and it was sunny for a little bit. And then sun started to go down and nothing, you know, again, stay till dark, and nothing happened. And hiking back in the dark, we saw a doe, which was a little bit encouraging, but still, you know, 2 days, and it was miserable. So after that, we were close enough to Laramie where we could drive over an hour to get home and at least sleep in a warm bed. And then we figured that we'd just, you know, wake up at 3:30 or 4, get back on the road, and get to wherever we wanted to be. It was day one and two. We were at almost 18, 19 miles in 2 days and had only seen a doe.
I remember you had texted me early on in your trip, and you're like, man, this is getting rough. We've got 20-some miles on and not seeing much. And so let's move to that next, the frustration and expectations. So you were expecting to walk up, set up, and you had your shot ready, man. You've been practicing for it. You're thinking tagged out opening morning, right? Back at the truck, hunting with the fiance and done. And so how discouraging is that when you were that amped up and you were that ready to go for that first morning?
I think I was so frustrated because I knew it wasn't going to be that easy. You know, I felt like I'd done everything that you have to, but it's never as simple as doing that. Even here, you know, you go up into the Alpine, there's not going to be any people. You're going to see a bunch of deer. That doesn't mean you're going to get one. So I knew going in, it was going to be tough. I knew there's going to be other people. I knew there could be weather. I knew all that stuff. And so the fact that I allowed myself to be, you know, I wouldn't say, I was confident. I don't think I was sure of it, because again, you know, I'm not a
You never can be
a slam dunk, you know. So I think I was upset that I allowed myself to be that frustrated by what I knew I should have expected. So you know, starting day three, it was just okay. This is it, man. You're doing it, and so it really undulated back between being so excited and happy, and we're just out there and we're doing the thing, you know. In the morning, gosh, you know, any minute it could come out. And then midday, it's kind of, okay, you have some lunch, take a nap, and just enjoying the experience. But then there's also that underlying frustration. But at no point did we not wake up early, ready to go. You know, it wasn't like, oh, this sucks, let's sleep in. It was dark to dark every day. I'd never been on a hunt like that, where it was just so tasking and so emotionally draining, yet so just fun and enrapturing. So it was weird. And but fun.
Yeah, so what'd you think about that type of hunt?
I could still be doing it. I mean, I'd be on day like what, 17 or something right now, but man, it's just so great to, it's so different, you know, and enjoying it for what it is, and you just can't compare things like that. And I fly fished for a long time, and you know, I've come down from Alaska to go trout fishing in California, where I used to live, just because I love those rivers. And so people are like, dude, why are you leaving in the middle of spring steelhead in Alaska to go fish for, you know, trout in California? It's like, well, it's different, you know, and it is what it is. And if you can be happy with a 14-inch, you know, brown trout or rainbow trout that you caught on a dry fly, it's not, you can't compare the two. You know, a 30-inch steelhead on a fly rod is amazing, but there's something about, you know, 14, 18-inch trout rising to your fly too. And so I think that kind of helped me appreciate the fact that, okay, there's other people around, and this is kind of crazy, but man, this is fun. It's different, and it's cold, but it's a dry cold, not the wet cold we get up here. So I just loved it, man. It was just fun to get down there. You don't, not everybody gets to do that. So that was cool.
And this is a point that I want to make to my audience, right? The rookie audience. And that is that the right now you're probably looking back on those first few days and that frustration. And to me, every time that I go out there and I come home, I remember nothing but how awesome it was, right? There's no, when you're in the middle of it and you're at 10,000 feet and you're still climbing and your legs are exhausted, all you can think about is how bad it sucks. But then when you get home and I'm sitting here in front of the computer, all I can think about is, I wish I was at 10,000 feet still climbing right now, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
There's
it's
just
great to run the program.
It.
Yeah. You know, that was part of it. I kept reminding myself, and that was one of the reasons why it was so fun to still get up, is because this is what it takes. This isn't epic. This is just mule deer hunting. And I was just reminding myself of that this isn't, you know, you're not hardcore. This is just what it takes, you know, and I'm happy that I'm waking up and I'm ready and willing to do dark to dark, and no matter whatever weather, and there's going to be frustration, but just figuring it out and finding that difference between what I expected and what it is. And it was great. So, but by day three, you know, we'd only seen that doe. It was starting to get a little, all right, we're running out of time here. You know, like at some point I would like to see a buck. So
yeah, any buck, right? Right now I just want to see any buck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. One more question, and then I'll let you just kind of rip through the story, right, and kind of tell it from there. How'd your fiance do staying with you, and is she a hunter, or was this one of her first trips?
We met 3 years ago when she was in Alaska visiting. It was actually my high school basketball coach's daughter. She was up visiting her, and that's how we met. And she'd never fired a gun before. She'd never hunted. Her first animal that she had taken last year, she shot a rabbit. She'd made some friends and they had some property and they had hunted. And so she was kind of like, oh, I'm kind of into it. My boyfriend, it's me, is kind of into hunting. So I'll see what this is about.
You hope it was you.
She shot a rabbit and she kind of liked that. And then I went down there. I had a little a doe antelope tag, and I went down there to hunt that last year. And I mean, it was one of those hunter management units where there's tons and tons of people. It was absolutely crazy. And I missed a couple shots, ended up eating the tag. But that was crazy too, because you're on someone's ranch, and so there's cows in the background and there's houses in the background. And so it was so, I was so afraid to take any sort of shot because it's so flat, you know? And I was like, there's a cow, right? I can't take the shot because I just don't know what's going to happen. So, a week after that tag, she went to a friend's private property and she shot a bull elk. And she sent me a text and said, bull down. I was like, oh, it's great. You know, I figure it's her first big game animal. She shot a little spike or something, you know, just a little starter bull, which there's no such thing as a starter bull, but it was a 5x5 elk. I'm thinking, oh my gosh. So at that point she became the provider in the relationship, even though that was her first big game animal. So that's all that she had killed to that point. And then she came up in August of this year, and I proposed on a deer hunt. So we were up, hiked up, took my boat for about an hour and a half to this spot. And then we rode our bikes about 6 miles up an old logging road and then hiked in from there and shot the buck. And then once we were done packing it, getting into the game bags, then I proposed and she said yes. And then we had to hike out. So she was all about it. Like she's get up the mountain. She's totally into it. And so she was, there was never a doubt that she was going to be with this the whole time, hunted all the way through. And she was right there. And it was pretty sweet. So I didn't ever have to worry or look over and think, oh, you know, is she having any fun? Like she's a gamer for sure. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is super cool. Well, good for you guys. Good for both of you. What a transition, rabbit to 5x5 bull elk.
I know it was, I was showing my buddies and they were making fun of me and I thought, yeah, absolutely. You know, but that was another nice thing about being, you know, the mediocre type persona is that I'm not threatened by it. It's just like, yeah, that sounds about right. So, that was so cool. And she's really, she's all about hunting. She has a lot of fun with it too. So she was stoked.
Good for both of you. So go ahead and just walk through the rest of the, I think you had a few more days out there, right? So
go
ahead and walk through that.
Day three was the first day that we got to the spot that we had scouted and I was excited about. And so we walked into that spot and I got to that rock and it was a lot more exposed than I remembered. There was a little canyon off to the right side of the property. that boarded private. And I was like, that canyon is, that's the place to be. That's where the eyes are though. And so sneaking to that rock, we were just right in view. And so we adjusted our approach, got to the back and saw some does, which was nice. And it was just so comforting to see does. There's five or six of them. And we hiked around that property a little bit more. And it was good to see does, but we saw no bucks, saw no, you know, not even one that was spooked at or anything. So the does were encouraging, and I figured, you know, and talked to a couple of buddies, and they thought, well, you know, there's probably not a buck with the does, but there could be one that's using the same area. And so that was our motivation on day five. Day four, we went back there. So day three, we'd seen the does, and day four, we went back to the same spot and saw the does again. And I was just staring at him, and I was trying to turn one into a buck, and it actually turned into a buck. It had such narrow, thin antlers that it looked like chopsticks were taped to the top of the head. And so we call them chopstick, where I was like, well, that's a buck. And they kind of scooted out, and I was like, oh man, well, I guess what I wanted, you know. But I'm thinking, you know, based on what we saw in the game cams, what we saw during the summer, I was thinking it'd be sweet to get a 3-point, you know, 4-point would be awesome, but that might be asking too much. But now on day four, I'm like, chopstick buck might have to go, right? If that's the only thing that we're seeing, then that might have to happen. So on our way out of that spot, we were walking and just looked off to the right, and I saw a forky and looked at it, and I put my binos up, like, dude, that's a forky. It wasn't too far away, so we just kept walking because it was maybe 20 yards from private property, and I didn't want to shoot a frontal shot on a bed of deer when private property is right behind it, because, you know, if you miss it or you injure it, I was like, you know, paranoid about the private property. So we walked past it to adjust the angle, then as I was crawling back to it to make a shot, it went from bedded to running without even standing up. It was, if I wasn't so angry, I would have been impressed by it, but I was just almost belligerent with anger because I'm just thinking, I just want a shot. Just give me a shot. Just give me a shot. Just give me a shot. And then there's a shot at this forky. It was maybe 40 yards away, and I screw up the stock, and I was so angry. So that was day four.
Hey, guy, were you with a bow or with a rifle?
Rifle, okay. Yeah, at probably day two, I was thinking, dude, there's no way that I could hunt these things with a bow right now. There's the romantic notion. You watch those YouTube videos and think, oh, that'd be so cool to do. I'm like, dude, yeah. You gotta figure a lot of stuff out before you start doing that stuff with a bow.
Yeah.
So that night, you know, we only got 2 days left, and I'm thinking, all right, you know, if forky, we're just hoping for a forky. Hope he's back there, and Abby had a tag too, and she's thinking, I'll shoot chopstick. So
yeah, you know, where's chopsticks right now? Let's go for him. Yeah.
And that was, you know, you got to keep your head in the game. And day four, we're just the expectations had totally changed. You know, I'd gone from, we're going to sneak up to this rock, and there's going to be a big buck bedded, and I'm going to take the shot from 260. And now I'm just trying to scrap together a forky. But again, I was just thinking, you know, this is it. This is what it takes. This is, you know, this is your first time ever hunting down here. This is what you need to expect. So, day five, it's chopstick time. We head out to the spot. It's kind of sunny again. The weather hasn't really changed, and we go out there and we see chopstick in with some does, and, they bump a little bit. We try to make a move, and they just blow out. And we're thinking, what in the world? Like, what happened there? So as we're walking out of the BLM land, we see that someone else had parked right next to us and hiked in. We thought, oh, they may have taken the route that we normally did, which was in full view of the canyon, which is in view of chopstick and the does. So kind of figure that they blew them out for us, which, so again, frustrated, can't even get chopstick, right? Feeling just worthless, right? I have no confidence in myself, can't even get chopstick. How dare you have expectations of a 3-point or 4-point? You know, go to a different spot, and we're hiking around about 2 miles, 2.5 miles back in, and glass back toward the road where the car is parked, and there's a buck on the opposite side of the road. We're like, dude, okay. So we just get drop down and we just haul. We stop by the car, drop off her pack, and then cross the road. And it's tough to hike or tough to stalk uphill. And we managed to do it. We managed to figure it's at the top of this like pyramid thing. So if we saw it feeding at the top and there's not much of a face and it fed across a ridge to another face. But you know, when we're at the top of these things, some of those faces, the top of the faces is, you know, 20 yards tops, mm-hmm. Before they can disappear across the ridge. So we get up there and I think, all right, it fed from this ridge to this ridge to this ridge. It probably took, you know, 5 minutes, but it actually was just changing beds. And we got to about 20 yards and it pops up and it takes off over the ridge. I think, dude, that was a great stalk, but you got to be thinking that it's in the bed, right? You can't just think, oh, it went to the other side. You have to know for sure that it went to the other side or over the ridge before you just assume it. So I was a little upset, but I ran to the other ridge where it disappeared and I see it on the opposite ridge. And I'm kind of paranoid about private property again. And so I look at my Onyx, I check my Onyx, and it's on our land. Great. It's just standing there broadside. And I don't bother ranging it because I'd already taken so much time on the Onyx, you know, checking my phone to see if it was on private land or not. And I had my scope on 5 power. And so when I got a rest and I was looking at it, the buck looked pretty small. So I thought it was a long way away. I didn't range it again because I'd taken too much time with the Forky the day before. And so I didn't want to take, you know, too much time on this one. So I rushed this one. I didn't range it, shot over its head twice. And then it took off. And I was just beside myself. I was so upset because, you know, I just give me a shot. Please just give me a shot. Give me a shot. Mm-hmm. And then I screw up a Forky. And then the next day I screw up a Forky again. I'm thinking I'm eating this tag, man. This is just, so I do like an out loud recap to myself as we're walking back to her car. And I'm just, dude, you're how dare you think that you're going to get a 4 point, you idiot. How do you not? And I think, dude,
yeah,
so much self-doubt. And then I'm thinking like, dude, no, actually you covered a lot of ground. You made the stock from about a mile to about 20 yards. You know, you screwed that up, but you still, you know, you checked for property. You're not just, you know, going all Western and shooting all over the place. You know, just looking for those positive things to kind of keep the brain going. And hey man, you're like, all right, that happens. Get your head back in the game. So day 6, woke up. It was much colder. As we're driving out to the spot, there was some snow. And we saw some deer together on the way out. And then we were heading to the spot that I wanted to – chose a different glassing spot because I figured the canyon's the place to be. And so we set up on the canyon. It's maybe a little bit close. Nothing came out. It was pretty foggy. On our way back, or we looped around to this little basin where the canyon opens up, and I saw 2 bucks sparring. And I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, dude. But I don't range them. I don't look through the binos. I'm just totally enamored with this. Oh gosh, what's going on here? This is beautiful. Mm-hmm. There's some snow on the ground. It's cold. 2 bucks sparring. This is perfect. As we try to loop back to where we were, they just vanished, which was crazy. But they definitely came out of that canyon. And I was wondering if they came out of the canyon because we weren't there, or, you know, if we would have been there, it would have been a perfect shot. But, you know, they probably didn't come out because we were there. So we start walking out to go have some lunch. And in the spot where I'd spooked the previous Forky 2 days before, we see Chopstick and then we see a Forky, and Abby shot the Forky. And so she had a buck, and it just, the relief, man. And it just felt so great that she had a buck, and I was so happy for her. And if one of us was going to get a buck, I know it's easy to say, well, of course he's going to say that, but man, it just felt so good that she was able to get a buck, and it was her first deer, you know, in a nice Forky, real wide, and it just so great. And so we went and had lunch, and I'm just so excited for her. And that afternoon we decided to go back into the same spot, see if one of those bucks that was sparring was still around, and chose a different spot that was a little bit further from the canyon, and just figured if they're going to come out, they're going to come out from the canyon. And sure enough, they did. And they emerged, and that 4-point emerged. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, really? Like, after all my bad attitude throughout the whole week, it was like bad attitude, great attitude, and then I get this shot at this 4-point, and I go to shoot, and my gun's frozen, so I eject the cartridge. You know, I'm just trying to thaw out whatever needs to be thawed in order to make the shot, and so I got it all fixed, and shot and missed, and then shot and hit, and then, you know, walked up on it. It was crazy. It's hard to even put into words, you know, like you say it was an amazing experience and the best hunt ever and so lucky and so blessed. But, you know, anybody who's even been out on hunts just knows that there's no way to articulate that feeling. And so Abby and I both getting a buck on the same day.
That's amazing.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And the whole time you're telling yourself, I'm never going to shoot a 4-point. What was I thinking?
It just came full circle. And that was the thing. Like, there were a couple of times where I was so negative in my head, you know, and I thought, man, the way that you responded was such, like, just self-doubt. Like, you don't deserve a nice buck. Just be happy with a chopstick, or be happy with a 4-key. And so to end up getting, you know, a 4-point, and it wasn't a huge 4-point, but I did not care at all. I just can't stop looking at the picture. And the whole rest of the day, Abby and I were just looking at each other. Like, I can't believe that happened.
In one day. That's pretty awesome, man. And there's something to be said there that I think is awesome. And it's just that perseverance, I guess, and that drive, determination. Because there's so many people that get that self-doubt and go home.
Yeah.
Right? It's never going to happen. They miss that shot. They miss that first shot. And that was my only opportunity. I'm out of here. Right. And they take off and they head home, they go to the house, they do whatever. And there's a lot of people. I think there's also a lot of people that say, oh, I would never do that. Right. Never would I will always drive on. And when it happens, they end up going home. So I think it's awesome. You guys stuck it out, man, as a team, stuck it out, and look what happens, man. Was that the last day that you're going to be hunting, or did you have a couple days left?
We did have one day if we needed it, but we ended up using that for, and it ended up being good because you're, you know, cutting up two deers and you're, you know, grinding it up, the grind parts, and then you're vacuum packing it. And I needed some time to get it frozen before I headed back. But going back to that perseverance thing, it was just the program. And I think that was, you cheat the experience so much if you do cut the corners on it, you know, and if you do get frustrated and you don't stay up till dark. And that was, you know, when I realized early on that this is the program, this is what happens. You can get into your brain, and I certainly did that, you know, you did the work, you did the e-scouting, and so you're entitled to a nice buck. You know, you saw it in June, and so you're going to see it in October. And so when that didn't happen, you know, kind of that realization that this is what you have to do. This is what's required. This isn't an epic, grueling hunt. This is just mule deer hunting. You know, this is just what's required. And so I think that was, ended up being, if we want to do this, we're going to have to do it right. And so that ended up working out. And that was the nice thing. And so I'm glad that in hindsight, it was perseverance. But, you know, it's just, some of those programs are tough. You know, elk hunting is tough. And I one day want to get one. And mule deer hunting is tough, and it's just the program, you know, it's just what you need to expect going into it. And if you do that, then I think you're less likely to cheat the experience, and you're less likely to go home early. And it doesn't take much, you know, like just sleeping in one day, or, you know, leaving before dark one day. And it's just, you just got to do it. Like, what else are you going to do? Right. Yeah. I mean, are you
mountain naps? Naps are key, I think.
Yeah. 100%. Like that midday thing, but this is what you say you love to do. And so if you say you love to do it, then don't cheat it. And that was, I'm just so happy that I didn't have that moment where you're just, cause I don't think, you know, I'm not a Ryan Lampers guy. I'm not going 15 miles back in. I think I have just like the basic level of tolerance for that type of necessary misery.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that are very, very successful 2 to 3 miles from the road that don't go 15 miles deep.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people, I'm one of them, it sounds like you're one of them, that chopstick would have been awesome, right? Like, I would have been totally happy to come home with chopstick. and it wouldn't have bothered me. I did it last year on a coos deer hunt, right? I ended up shooting a little spike deer on my last day at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, literally right before the end of daylight. And it was awesome. He's an awesome deer. I love that deer.
Yeah. So, it's nice to have that perspective too. I know some, I don't feel bad, but some of my students up here who, you know, by the time they're 16, they've shot 4 or 5 4-point bucks. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, man, you know, I didn't start hunting till I was 31. So, you know, are they going to be able to appreciate a forky? You know, are they going to, I mean, great for them. You know, they've shot all these 4 points. That's great. But that, I wonder if they, I hope they haven't lost that, that wonder and that, that satisfaction, that excitement for just, man, I got a deer, you know, and if I hope I never lose that, you know, and it was so great to get that 4 point, and it's, you know, comparison wise, it's very small compared to other mule deer, 4 points, but man, just so excited and so happy. And, oh, it's great to have that appreciation. I hope I never lose it.
Yeah. I don't think you will. I think there's some people that just never will. And there's some people that have never had it. Right.
Yeah.
And there's some people that are just trained by social media that you should never shoot something like that because it's not worthy of the photograph, you know?
And yeah. Or they say that, hey, oh, I got a nice meat buck. Like, dude, you can just say, like, they're all meat bucks. Yeah. You don't have to qualify it as like, I wish I would have shot something bigger, but don't feel, you know, don't think I'm a bad hunter because I had to settle for a forky. You know, it's, man, good job. You got one. Like, why can't we be happy for each other? Why can't we be, you know, satisfied with that? Why do we have to like, who's the biggest, who's the baddest? Like, dude, that's a no win game.
I'm satisfied with it. I know that much.
That's good. Where was that coos deer?
Where was it?
Yeah.
Arizona. Southern Arizona.
Nice.
I don't have it done yet. I still have, that was almost a year ago and the head's still in the freezer. It fits because he's a little spike like this big, but I need to get it done. I want to Euro mount the head and I'm just going to keep it here on the desk or something because I'm proud of that thing, man. Those are some wily little deer, man, and they're hard to get. And I was lucky. So I call it luck. I'm not skillful. I was lucky. He was in the wrong place, wrong time.
You know, if you do the right thing, then I don't know if you can create luck or, you know, if enough skill puts you in increases your chance of being lucky or whatever, but you know, at least you appreciate it. That's the main thing.
For sure. He was tasty. That's for sure. They're very good, but sure. They're very good eating. But anyway, man, so it sounds like an awesome hunt, and even cooler, you got to do it with your fiance. I don't know that I've had anybody on here that's been able to tell a story quite like that. So that's really cool, man.
Thanks. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, good. Good, good. I think that's all I got. Where do people find you?
MediocreAlaskan.com is the website there. I post the columns I write for the Juneau Empire on there, and then the podcast stuff. Alaska Lund is the Instagram that I use the most. I also have the Mediocre Alaskan Instagram, but I don't know, doing two Instagrams, I don't know. Just two Instagrams. It's twice the hassle. So, either one of those is fine there. And, that's about what I got.
And who do you write the articles for?
I write for the Juneau Empire. It's a newspaper in Juneau,
Empire, Juneau, Alaska.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I live in Ketchikan and I teach high school English here, but, I write for the Juneau Empire newspaper, which some of the kids are like, how do you write? They're our rival. How dare you write for their paper? I'm like, yeah, well, that's how it works.
They pay me. Yeah. That's how payment works.
There you go.
Exactly. That's cool, man. Very cool. Well, for all of my listeners, definitely go check out the Mediocre Alaska. It's very quickly become one of the top downloads for me. That's for sure. I listen to about every show that comes out, and there's always, you do a lot of good stuff. You have some guests on every now and then. And why don't you talk about the show a little bit and sort of how that's structured so people know what they're going to get when they go listen to it.
Yeah, I first started off with kind of a fitness, lifestyle, outdoors type stuff. And it's really just morphed into another one of those hunting, fishing podcasts. But, you know, it is Alaska and I have tried to have some local people on. And I have some people that, you know, might have some name recognition, but for the most part, it's kind of fun to just talk to, I wouldn't say like ordinary, but people don't necessarily have the platform. You know, so many of those people have great stories that they aren't as refined, but they're just great people and they're getting after it and they're not personalities yet. You know, they're not platformed people. They're not influencers. They're just the ordinary, great, good person, great hunter types. And so it's fun to have those people on and you get an idea of what it's like to be in Ketchikan year round, because I'm talking about duck hunting one week and the next week I'll talk about hunting or steelhead fishing or, you know, so it's kind of a, what it's like to live in Ketchikan, Alaska throughout the year. And so it's fun. And then have great guests from down south, like yourself on there, and have Brad Brooks and got to have Mark Boardman on. He's a good dude. I met him a couple years ago.
Mark is a good guy. He's very good guy.
He was up here for a bear hunt and he was had a night in Ketchikan. So I drove him around a little bit. We looked at some goats and, yeah, it's nice to have control. I can do whatever I want. And so there it is.
You know, I've always thought it's just amazing at the people that are able to duck hunt one weekend and then the next weekend you're out fishing and then you're deer hunting. And then, you know, I mean, I just think that's amazing. And when I lived in Texas, I never really had that opportunity. And now I'm here in New Mexico and I got mountains and, you know, it's a little bit easier, but even still, there's time is certainly a commodity that it's tough. You know, it's tough to get out, but I try to get out whenever I can. I'm heading out for a bear hunt tomorrow and
nice.
I call it more hiking with a rifle. And if I happen across something, then I'll shoot it. If I don't, then I just say, oh, I went hiking today. Right.
Yeah, but exactly. Yeah. I got a buddy who lives in Anchorage and he's a doctor. But he does weekend warrior doll sheep and he does caribou and stuff. So I've had him on and, I was all scheduled to go on a moose hunt, but that didn't work out 2 years ago because of his rounds. But so I've had some of them on and I had a couple of buddies in Fairbanks. We've talked caribou and we've talked doll sheep and it's just crazy that there's as much as you can do something every day down here in Southeast Alaska. Alaska is so big and vast that, you know, Anchorage is a totally different program than Fairbanks is even a different program. So talking to those guys about, you know, caribou and brown bear and, you know, trapping lynx or trapping wolf. I'm thinking, it's crazy. But they're like, dude, it'd be great to catch steelhead. I'm like, you know, nowhere is perfect.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point.
Whatever you have in your area, man, as long as you do it and you don't keep looking for, well, if I lived here, then I could do this. Well, you know, you got to be the type of person who does what you have. So
that's a very, very good point. Caribou. I'm going to go back and find those shows on your podcast too, because that's something that's on my bucket list for sure. I've never been much of a want to go sheep hunting guy. That guy right there is about as big of a sheep as I want to get. I'm not a mountain climber, man. I don't love heights. And there's just something about those straight wall faces that don't impress me. Yeah. Well, they impress me, but they scare the crap out of me. So yeah. I think I'll stay a little bit lower and try for caribou or something along those lines sometime.
Yeah. I did my buddy, Steve Shannon and I talked about the Hall Road hunt. So it's further north, but you're right near the pipeline there. And so we talked about some caribou and had him on twice. And we've talked about some of the early ones. Like I think it's under Adventures or Trips or something like that. There's a link on the top of the website there that has a link to some of those other hunting notes. It's hunting trips. You go to MeokerAlaskan.com and scroll over the hunting trips. I got Alaska doll sheep, caribou, Hall Road, moose in the interior, and then a packing list for caribou if you want to check that out there. So
I will. In fact, I'm going to bring up. Don't close that web page. I'm going to bring your site up right now. I love the name too. Mediocre Alaskan.
Yeah. Episode 29. It's a DIY caribou hunt north of the Arctic Circle.
Cool.
That's a pretty.
Yeah. So me and my buddy, Jordan, my partner with Backcountry Rookies, he says when he retires from the military, he wants to do some kind of hunt in Alaska. And I don't know if he's decided on what that is yet, but he's still got 4 or 5 years left. So I think we may continue to stick a few dollars in a sock in the drawer somewhere, you know, and save up for it. And then go up there for a couple of weeks and really, really get the best, do some fishing on the side. And
some of those float hunts where you can fish for grayling, And then you can hunt like that. That would be awesome. I've done a couple of floats here in Southeast, but you know, getting on one of those bigger rivers, the Charlie River, one of those other ones that flows into the Yukon, and just getting into that huge territory would be a lot of fun. So I want to go up there for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Well, cool, Jeff. I appreciate you coming on, man. Good conversation. It sounds like you guys had an incredible hunt. So congratulations to both of you, and tell your fiance congratulations for sure.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for all you do, man. I love the podcast, and I appreciate your angle, and appreciate all you're doing to provide quality content to a lifestyle that sometimes can get a little out of control with egos and such. So it's great.
Yeah, well, you're welcome, man, and I appreciate everything you do. So very good, and good luck with your wedding. I know that's coming up right away too, so good luck with everything you got coming. You got a busy year, I know.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, dude. Out of here.
Take care.
The Backcountry Rookies podcast is proudly brought to you by Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting. The University of Elk Hunting is the most comprehensive elk hunting education platform that you can get. From learning and knowing how to call elk to packing an elk out of the woods, University of Elk Hunting covers every step of the elk hunting process. Use the promo code ROOKIES and save $20 on your membership today. Go Hunt Insider. Go Hunt is always working hard to add value for the insiders. On top of draw odds, unit statistics and analysis, insider points in the Go Hunt gear shop, and a ton of more features, now Go Hunt is adding real 3D maps to Insider at no additional cost. Adding these maps has solved my problems of having three screens up on my computer all the time, running Insider, Google Earth, and a mapping software. Now I got them all in one place, collected right there in Go Hunt Insider. Use the code ROOKIES when you purchase Go Hunt Insider and get $50 in gear shop credit to use in the Go Hunt gear shop. Vortex Optics. Vortex designs, engineers, and produces a complete line of premium sport optics and accessories. And did you know that Vortex is now in the apparel game? So check them out, Vortex Apparel. Vortex is dedicating to providing top quality customer service and products to the users, and backs it all up with their lifetime VIP warranty. Use the code ROOKIES and save 20% off of apparel on the Vortex website. Now let's get to the show.